It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Faith attempt to address the arguments of gun control. It's the Will Cain podcast on Fox News Podcast. What's up? Welcome to the weekend. Welcome to Friday. As always, I hope you will download, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your audio entertainment. Apple, Spotify, or at Fox News Podcast. You can increasingly join us on YouTube or Rumble and watch along while we build this community together. Today's episode is an example of something I want to build together in the future. I want to not just look at the world through my own lens. I want to not just look at the world through my own acknowledged bias. I want to always be in search of the truth. And in order to find the truth, you have to challenge your preconceived notions. You have to challenge the opinions that you hold dear. And we can't simply seek to confirm our bias. In order to do so, we're going to have to dig deep. We're going to have to, in good faith, look at the arguments of our detractors. We're going to have to look at the position of those who disagree and find, do they hold water? Or do they help us understand why it is we believe what we believe? Today is an effort in steel manning. Instead of straw manning, steel manning, providing the best possible case for our opponents for an opinion that we already hold. You know, before we dive in, here's a quick parenthetical and a quick lesson that I've learned with age. You can't outwork it. Man, I love to focus on process and I love to focus on work. We often talk about what it takes to be better together. I think we've talked about that from a spiritual perspective. I think the whole endeavor here together is from an intellectual perspective. And I've taken time to talk to you about my pursuit of being better physically. I've been through a rough couple of weeks, a bad stretch where I've spent way too much time in New York and way too little time at home, which means that I've been eating takeout and jamming a few workouts in. But I've been decent about getting those workouts in. On Memorial Day, I did Murph, and that tore me up for the entire week. 2 mile run, 100 pull-ups, 200 push-ups, 300 squats set me back this week. I went back to the gym today in Dallas, and everything hurts. And nothing seems to be accomplishing the reward for the effort that I have put in. And the lesson is, you can't outwork it. At my age, I am going to have to become hardcore about my diet. It just can't be takeout. It can't be pizza in New York. It just can't be dessert. I just can't outwork it. I'm going to have to start not just working out, but I'm going to have to stop eating out. I'm going to have to start eating right. I can't outwork it. All right, end of parenthetical. But in the spirit of hard work, in the spirit of putting ourselves through the ringer, let's put our intellectual exercise to the test. Let's take our opinion, which is going to be represented as my opinion, of someone who believes in gun rights, who believes that gun culture is not just a tolerated aspect of American society, but a celebrated part of American culture. Let's put that preconceived notion to the test against a good faith representation of the arguments of our opponents. Let us start talking today about gun control. Last night, the President of the United States addressed the nation and pushed forward several measures along with Congress that he believes will do something when it comes to gun violence. That's the argument. largely, that you hear from a 30,000-foot level. When we are faced with these societal insanities, when we're faced with a Uvalde, Texas, a Sandy Hook, Connecticut, a Tulsa, Oklahoma, we hear the mantra, we must do something. And by something, it almost always means we must do something about guns. It very rarely means we must do something about mental health. And to be fair, just like liberals reflexively reach for the gun, increasingly conservatives reach reflexively for mental health. That, like guns, is a proposed solution that needs to be analyzed, that needs to be critically examined. What, in fact, would we do to address a crisis of mental health? No, it almost always means something about guns. It never means something about our culture. It never means something about school safety. Nobody's asking us to do something about first-person shooter video games. Nobody's talking about isolation through the lens of social media. It doesn't mean doing something about the breakdown of the family unit. No, it almost always means do something about guns. So, as the Democrats move forward on proposing a bill to control guns, and the President of the United States addresses the nation and says it's time to control guns, let's look at their arguments.
We'll be right back with more of the Will Cain Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Number one, the Second Amendment is not absolute. President Joe Biden says when the Second Amendment was enshrined, that you couldn't go out and buy a cannon. It's true that the Second Amendment is not absolute. The words of the Second Amendment say shall not be infringed. But the Supreme Court has interpreted that over various decades to mean you can own a weapon that is in, quote, common usage in the American public. In 1776, you very well could own a cannon. There was no law restricting your ability to own a cannon. The President of the United States is simply wrong, or, and we are addressing these arguments in good faith, simply lying. In D.C. versus Heller, the most famous Supreme Court case when it comes to the Second Amendment, it was affirmed that the American people as individuals maintain the right to possess firearms. In short, what that means is it wasn't interpreted that that right was protected for militias, but rather for the individual. And it focused in on this terminology of a gun in common usage, or a firearm, or a weapon in common usage. The way we should understand that is, it's true, you can't go out and purchase a low-impact nuclear weapon. You can't have that at your house under the auspices of home defense. But does it apply to, for example, what has been termed an assault weapon? So we sit here today and we acknowledge that, yes, it's true, the Second Amendment is not absolute, but does it give the government the right to regulate guns that are at the center of the current American debate? Does it give the government the right to regulate the assault weapon? Well, let's first start with this. Number two, what is an assault weapon? An assault weapon is a government-created term. It's also a marketing-related term within the gun industry that has very little meaning. Really, press anyone who says we need to do something to restrict assault weapons to define an assault weapon. And it's almost impossible for that person to do so. In the early 2000s, there was an assault weapon ban here in the United States of America. How did they define an assault weapon? Well, they did it through a variety of restrictions on cosmetic, at best, applications to a semi-automatic rifle. It couldn't have a forward pistol grip. I can't remember all the different aspects of that particular law, but they amounted to cosmetic adjustments to a semi-automatic rifle. Because in the end, that's what a quote-unquote assault weapon is. It is a semi-automatic rifle. That means you pull the trigger and one bullet exits the gun. You pull the trigger again, another bullet exits the gun. There is no action needed to take between pulling the trigger and ejecting a cartridge. You understand? There's no pump. There's no lever. There's no hammer that needs to be cocked. It's all in the mechanics of the gun. I want to make sure we distinguish this from an automatic rifle. Now, an automatic rifle is illegal in the United States of America, for what it's worth. It's not in common usage. Automatic rifles are, in popular conception, something like a machine gun, for lack of a better word, a Tommy gun. In our imagination, an Uzi is an automatic rifle or an automatic gun. But that's not necessarily true, because almost all of those particular guns can be made either semi-automatic or automatic. An automatic gun is one where you depress the trigger and bullets continue to fire until you let go of the trigger. Now, this terminology is mixed up. For example, sometimes you'll hear somebody talk about, oh, it's an automatic shotgun. That doesn't mean that you pull the trigger and shotgun shells fire BBs into the air continuously until you let go of the trigger. No, it simply means in that case, it's a semi-automatic shotgun. There is really no such thing. You probably don't know many people that have an automatic weapon. There are, and I was talking to Joey Jones this past weekend about this, somewhere between, I believe, 300 and 500,000 automatic weapons that were grandfathered into the laws that were passed, and they're all federally registered. So you can't just go purchase an automatic weapon. Largely what we're talking about is semi-automatic weapons, and an assault weapon is a semi-automatic rifle. Why does that matter? Well, the vast majority of guns in the United States are semi-automatic. Handguns, rifles, even many shotguns. Semi-automatic. Pull the trigger, you don't have to perform any action to ready the next bullet or cartridge to, or shell, to be fired then with the next depression of the trigger. In short, there's nothing unique about a quote-unquote assault weapon, not at least in its functionality. It's a shoulder-mounted rifle, and they have many different Lego-like attachments in what's become known as an assault weapon, the AR-15, for example. You can get varying sizes or retractability of stocks. You can mount various types of grips. You can get different types of optics attached to your AR, to your assault weapon. And by the way, AR doesn't mean automatic rifle. In its origination, it meant Armalite 15. That was the original manufacturer of the AR-15. Now, many brands make an AR-15. So the point I'm getting at is you press someone to define an assault weapon and you will have a hard time differentiating their definition from the vast majority of other guns in circulation in the United States of America. The AR-15, by the way, is the most popular rifle in America, making it firmly within the definition of something that is within common usage. I mean, the Supreme Court would uphold the idea that is a weapon protected by the Second Amendment, as again, distinguished from you owning a nuclear submarine. So the automatic rifle, the assault weapon, is almost indefinable. And when you are pressed, what you will often end up with is someone essentially defining a rifle that's black, matte black, and scary looking. Now, because it's of semi-automatic variety and because it's shoulder-mounted, it is true that the automatic rifle can shoot, can perform the function of shooting a bullet sometimes quicker than other varieties of gun because of the way it is mounted to your shoulder, held. It just makes it easier to operate than, say, you're holding a 9mm semi-automatic handgun. Yes, you can shoot that very quickly, but quickly and accurately, not so easy. So I wouldn't say that AR-15s, for example, aren't more effective. Of course they are. That's why people like them, or that's why there are, people say they are military-style weapons. They're not necessarily military-style weapons. There are civilian versions of a military version of that rifle. Most military have select fire. You can select between three-round burst, a single burst. But in the civilian population, it's simply a single fire. If I get anything wrong, there's many of you out there, by the way, that know more about guns than I do. I apologize, and I'm wide open to your criticism. But the long and short of it is, we're focusing in on something that is almost impossible to define. The automatic rifle, the assault weapon, the assault rifle, even the AR-15. All of these are very, very difficult to say. This particular thing will be outlawed. And to say why it will be outlawed in distinguishing it from another gun. Let's talk stats for just a moment. Let's quantify the American gun problem. So there are roughly 45,000 homicides and suicides due to guns in the United States of America on a given year. 54% of that 45,000 is attributable to suicide. 43% to homicide. That puts you roughly at 19 or 20,000 homicides a year. Now, of those, 80% in the United States of America are due to gun violence. 80% of homicides are via the gun. Now, how does that compare, first of all, to the past? Well, we're on an uptick in the last couple of years. It probably comes as no surprise to you. In the 1980s and 1990s, into the early 1990s, we were in the spate of gang violence and violence in general. The American homicide rate was something roughly around 7 homicides per 100,000 people. That dipped down to like 4 in the 2000s and the 2010s. And then starting in about 2019, 2020, it started to uptick again to the point where now we're somewhere, I believe, between 5 and 6 per 100,000 homicides. Again, 80% of that is from gun violence. Now, how does that compare to the rest of the world? Well, the rest of the world would include countries in Central America and South America. And the United States is nowhere close to those types of countries. So this is a slightly different study than the one I just gave you, which I believe was numbers from the CDC. This one says there are 10 per 100,000 American intentional homicides. And that is as compared to, for example, the number one country in the world, El Salvador, 39 homicides per 100,000. Venezuela, 38. Weirdly, Greenland. What's going on in Greenland? 32. 26 in Greenland, 32 in Guatemala, 26 in Colombia. Now, let's go to the lowest end of the chart. Singapore, only 0.1 homicide per 100,000. China, 0.2. The UK, 0.3. Germany, 0.9. So America is almost 10 times as violent as is, say, Germany. Canada's at 2.1, France 2.7. That's your world context. And I've given you some context here in the United States over the last several decades, but that is your context across the world for American deaths by homicide. Now, let's bring this full circle because I've just fired a bunch of numbers at you, but this is the important one that we go to. Of those 45,000 deaths by gun, 19,000 to 20,000 of them by homicide by gun, taking out the suicides. 60% come from a handgun. 3% come from the rifle. 1% from the shotgun. And then the leftover, and it's a huge leftover, are not qualified, are not cataloged. The FBI and local police departments don't know or don't say what type of gun was used in the killing. The vast majority of gun violence in the United States of America comes to you courtesy of the handgun, not the rifle, which would include the semi-automatic rifle, the AR-15, and pretty much anything else that people would want to define as an assault weapon. I'm sure there are some pistols. I think the Uzi is technically under the definition of a pistol, but the Uzi is not a commonly owned gun. Almost all of what we would call an assault weapon would be cataloged under rifle, and 3% of American homicides are attributable to the rifle. Why am I giving you all these numbers? Because we need to understand where we are in context, and we need to constantly be asking, does the proposed solution address the problem? And then if it does, we ask ourselves, is it still a good solution? Simply solving the problem is not good enough. It must pass constitutional muster, and it must be balanced against the cons of passing that law. So let's be honest and talk for a moment about the pros and cons of gun ownership. There is no doubt that one of the best arguments that gun control advocates make is that the level of gun homicide and mass shootings across the world is not comparable to the United States of America. This is happening more here than it does in any other country. That is true. That is without a doubt true. Now, that doesn't mean, let's broaden the spectrum and not just focus on mass shooting for one moment. That doesn't mean there's not violence in the UK. Oh no, there's violence. There is significant, for example, knife violence in Great Britain, whereas their gun violence is smaller than the United States by more than 20-fold. Australia, even less, I believe. Well, Australia is at one, so our violence is 10 times that of Australia, but it doesn't extinguish the concept of violence to do away with the gun. However, and we're doing this argument in good faith, we could reduce the level of violence in the United States of America if we made guns, poof, disappear overnight. In Australia, they had a gun buyback program. This was after a mass shooting, I believe it was in the 1990s in Australia, and they went on a massive gun buyback and confiscation program. And it is true, they haven't suffered from mass shootings or gun violence to the level of the United States since. But that shows us that if, for example, we could follow in the wake of Australia or the UK, where it's very difficult to own a gun, we would, yes, reduce violence. We would address the problem. Would it be worth it? Okay, let's stay on point number one, back up to point number one, talk about the Second Amendment. The purpose of the Second Amendment is not to protect your home. It's not to protect you from criminals. The purpose of the Second Amendment is not for hunting. No matter how many times Joe Biden says you do not need an assault weapon to hunt a deer, and then he likes to throw in the deer doesn't wear a Kevlar vest, that's not why you would own an AR-15. It's not the purpose of the enshrinement of this right in the Second Amendment. It is specifically, no matter how much mockery in modern day America is met with this purpose, it is specifically enshrined with the purpose of empowering the people to protect themselves against a tyrannical government. That is the purpose. Now, to that, Joe Biden would say, well, you need an F-15. An AR-15 is going to do nothing against the American military. You need an F-15, F-16, F-18. You need the new F-35, as we just talked about in the last episode of the Will Cain podcast with a Air Force fighter pilot. To that, I would say, Well, then why was one of the first actions of the Ukrainian government to pass out not just guns, but AR-style, AK-47, automatic, semi-automatic rifles to the civilian population? Why was that one of the first actions of the Ukrainian government when invaded by Russia? Tyranny comes in many forms. It can come from an external power, but it can come internally. And we can't scoff at that. We can't scoff at that possibility. Look, if you're on the left or the right, I think you would have to be humble about not scoffing at that possibility. If you're on the left, you spent the last 4 years suggesting that Russia stole an election and that we had a puppet president who was tyrannical in Donald Trump and would do anything to stomp over all of our rights. That was the position held by the vast majority of the left for the last 4 years. Why would you not be in fear of a potentially tyrannical government? And if you're on the right, you've looked at the last year and a half and said, I've seen crackdowns on free speech. I've seen the attempt to create a government disinformation board. I have seen the government talk about potential gun confiscation. I have seen this government go in directions that I never could have imagined in a year and a half's time. Why would I not be in fear, by the way, also forcing you to take a medicine against your will if you want to remain employed? Why would I not be in fear of a tyrannical government? This is the purpose of the Second Amendment. It doesn't give us the ability to own an F-35. We have to own something, according to the Supreme Court, in common usage. But we own that item in common usage with the expressed purpose of fighting back tyranny. And it shows practically to be something that is fairly effective. I give you Ukraine. So we've addressed the fact that assault weapons are very difficult to define. They are also a small percentage of the homicide rate in America. They're also not a significant percentage of even mass shootings in America. And we've balanced that, acknowledging that if we could accomplish complete eradication of guns, we've balanced that solution against the pros of gun ownership in protecting us from government tyranny. Then we address the practical side of this. You can't. You simply can't. Let's say Beto O'Rourke had his wish and he could confiscate all guns, ban the AR-15. Say he wanted to really address gun violence and he said, we got to do something about handguns. Joe Biden seemed to suggest just the other day that addressing handguns was a potentiality. He said something about 9mm, which is a common handgun usage as a quote unquote high caliber weapon, which, by the way, again, we need to, in good faith, arm everyone with knowledge. You need to know the 9mm is not a high caliber weapon. It's not a particularly large caliber. A caliber is the size of the bullet. There are bullets bigger than a 9mm. The 357, for example. The 44, for example. 9mm is bigger than a 22. Does that make it more dangerous? I've heard people say before 22s are particularly dangerous because they don't exit the body. They bounce around and ricochet off of bone, causing more wounds as they do so. Point is Joe Biden laying the groundwork to follow Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who says he's going to freeze all sales on handguns in that country? But let's say Beto O'Rourke had his wish, and you could confiscate whatever you wanted, handguns, assault weapons. There are 120 guns per 100 people in the United States of America. Repeat that. 120 guns for every 100 people. What's the current population? 330 million people in the United States of America? That puts gun ownership at something like 400 million guns. How are you going to get rid of those guns? Are you going to go door to door? Are you going to have the FBI? Are you going to have local police departments walk up to the doors of the most heavily armed people in the United States of America? Seriously, think about this for a moment. Who hold this right dear and passionately. Your proposal is you are going to send law enforcement door to door, confiscating an item that makes it almost impossible for the person owning that item to have confiscated. These are the exact people you don't get to confiscate stuff from. And they're not just going to turn them over. They're not going to sell them back in some gun buyback program. Just being real here. Come on. You got to have a real solution. I would imagine for the vast majority, I don't know what the percentage would be, for the vast majority of owners of the AR-15, you could offer them $10,000 for their rifle. and they would not take it. They're not owning it because they want to turn a profit. Some are. Maybe they have five. They'll sell you two. But you are not going to practically accomplish what it is that would be something that would actually effectuate the solution. If you wanted to go down the path of UK and Australia, and you decided you're not afraid of government tyranny, you weighed the pros and the cons, you understood the philosophy, and then you said it's worth it, could you even accomplish it? I don't think there's any way you come back with the answer of yes. All right. There we are on assault weapons. Let's move forward, though, and see if there's any good arguments to, quote unquote, do something. All right. What about this argument? Raising the age of ownership, for example, of the AR-15 from 18 to 21, or any gun for that matter, 18 to 21. I think it's an argument made in good faith. I will tell you this. I've been a part of gun culture for the vast majority of my life. Okay. I've had a gun in my house and in my hand since I was a kid. I was shooting handguns when I was in my teens. I was shooting rifles and shotguns earlier than that. I'm no expert, and there are plenty of gun experts who could criticize some of the things I've said in this podcast, but I'm also not ignorant. I have been taught gun safety from a father for almost all of my life. That has not protected me from being stupid. It is 100% true that young men are stupid for a good chunk of their life. Here's the story. I believe I was 17. I might have been 18. I've told the story to you before, I believe. I got a 357 for my birthday. It was beautiful. It was blued. Blued is that color. It's a traditional gun color. It's comes off as blackish almost. It had wood grips, okay? My dad and I had just watched a movie, Boys in the Hood, and we wanted to go look at some of our guns. And he pulled out another 357. This was a stainless 357, and it had what's called Packmeyer grips, rubber grips. And into a 17, 18-year-old's eyes, it looked way cooler than your traditional 357. I had my 357. We were examining them. Mine was unloaded, and I dry-fired it a few times. We were standing in the kitchen. My dad was an attorney, and there was a visiting attorney for a case from Kansas City staying in my sister's bedroom just off the kitchen. And I said, I like that gun. He goes, well, the one I gave you is nicer. And I said, really? And by the way, in retrospect, the one he gave me might have been one of the Colt snake guns. I mean, which is awesome, you know, like a Python or something like that. And I was like, yeah, I like the silver and black. And he's like, well, I'll trade you if you want. I was like, yes, let's trade. So he handed me I think it was a Smith & Wesson, this stainless one. I picked it up, probably registered in my head a little bit that it was heavier, but maybe it was the materials. I raised that to dry fire just like I had the other gun that I had checked and made sure. And I fired off a 357 hollow point bullet in my mom's tiled kitchen into a spice cabinet, blowing spices all over the kitchen and ringing my dad's ears and bringing my mom in, yelling at the top of her lungs, what are you doing? And I deserved every bit of it. What an idiot. I didn't check the new gun. I didn't pop out the cylinder and look. I was an idiot. And by the way, it wasn't the last time I was an idiot, and probably not the last time I was an idiot with a gun. Young men, the lawyer never came out of his bedroom, by the way. He told me the next morning, Will, I heard you say goodnight, but I thought I'd let the family handle it. I was lucky. All I hit was a stud in the house. Young men are stupid in a lot of ways in their life. So I understand this argument, especially when you see somebody like Salvador Ramos, who's 18 years old and does something like this. And we're talking about the compounding problems of mental health and teenagers and social media isolation. I get the instinct. Let's raise the age. But I think you have to then say, okay, I've acknowledged young men are stupid, which, by the way, in my estimation, this is just back of the envelope. I think we're stupid until about 25. I truly do. I don't know when our brains are fully formed, but you got to balance that against this, some logic. We allow people to begin to vote and be an adult at 18. We went over this in a couple episodes back of the Will Cain podcast. You have to wait to 21 to drink alcohol, 25. To own your own car insurance. Apparently in modern American society, 7 or 8 to begin changing your gender through puberty blockers. There's some push to push the voting age down to 16. I think it's a legitimate question. What is the age of adulthood in the United States of America? We have no problem putting an 18-year-old on the battlefield with a select fire automatic rifle. But we can't trust 18-year-olds back home to own a rifle? I'm sympathetic to the argument that we're idiots for a long time, but not everybody. I was an idiot. Many of you listening weren't idiots, I'm sure. You were much more fastidious about gun safety than I was in a couple of moments in my life. But then does it address the problem? I believe, and this stat, and you'll forgive me, I've read so many different studies over the past couple of days, comes to us, this number is put at 89 mass shootings since 1998. I told you there's numbers all over the board. I told you the other day I read 13 school mass shootings since the 1960s. The reason I don't address mass shootings or mass school shootings directly with stats here is that's all based upon definition. What's a mass shooting? 3, 4 different organizations use different numbers. What's a school shooting? Does it include stuff we saw like Salvador Ramos? Obviously. Does it include a gang confrontation in the parking lot or after a basketball game? No, that's not what we're trying to address. But of those 89, four were committed by people 21 and under. Four. By the way, the most violent groups, according to this study that I was reading, is 21 to 25-year-olds. Kind of backs up what I said about we're idiots for a long time. And I know this is different than being kind of idiot that doesn't check gun safety. We're talking about people that commit actual real acts of violence. After 21, 25, by the way, it's followed by 36 to 45. And forgive me for not citing that study in this exact moment. But it doesn't address the problem. To raise the age to 21 to own an assault rifle, think about the onion you're slicing. You've already sliced it down to a gun that's responsible as part of the rifle category for 3% of gun violence. Now you're slicing it again to, in this one study, 4 of 89 over the last 20 plus years committed by someone under the age of 21. It's like we're passing a law specifically to apply to Salvador Ramos, not to a common problem in the United States of America. Now, what about high-capacity magazines? Something we hear about. That means however many bullets that you can fit into a magazine. It's true, you take a rifle into a classroom and you've got a magazine that holds, I don't know, what, 15, 20 bullets? You can fire more rounds than if you had a small 5-round magazine you had to constantly reload. It's true. And then you could take, what, you know, 5 or 6 of those magazines in, and now you've got 100 rounds at your disposal. Where you've got, if you want to just quick change magazines and they're 5-round, you're constantly doing this, right? Or you have to stop and reload a magazine, shoving bullets down in. There's no doubt that you can fire more rounds in a short amount of time with a high capacity magazine than if you were having to reload constantly. And if you have to reload, you give law enforcement or anyone who would intervene an opportunity to step in, take you down.
We're going to step aside here for a moment. Stay tuned.
But think about what happened in Uvalde. It's not exactly applicable, is it? Salvador Ramos was in that classroom for an hour. An hour. He had time to reload as many times as he wanted. Now, maybe if there was long pauses between shooting, we don't know the details of that, by the way. Maybe law enforcement would have felt more emboldened to break in that door. I want to, again, address this argument in good faith. And I think there is an argument for that. It has to be balanced against the purpose of the Second Amendment. Once again, doesn't matter if you need that kind of those rounds for home defense. It doesn't matter if you need those kind of rounds for hunting. It's about the resistance of tyranny. And then you ask, does it affect the change? I think in New York a few years back, Governor Andrew Cuomo passed some random magazine limit. And I think he picked 7. And there are no magazines, no guns that took a 7-round magazine. You have to find something that is logical and applicable and real. I'm not 100% opposed to the idea. I'm open to having the conversation, to exploring potential limitations on magazine size. But again, I don't know that it addresses the problem directly, and a problem that is widely held. Now let's go to background checks. This is where you constantly hear, well, what about common sense gun laws that everybody agrees upon? And their stats quoted something like 90% of Americans support the idea of background checks. Well, here's what most people don't realize. We have background checks. That prevents somebody with a criminal record from buying a weapon, a felon. We have that. We have background checks. I don't know that you can point to a single background check that would have stopped any of these big violent incidences. It couldn't have stopped Salvador Ramos. What background check would have... He passed a background check. He wasn't a prior criminal. He had done nothing to flag himself to law enforcement. That takes us to red flag laws. Red flag laws, even more problematic. How do you start red flagging someone for mental health issues? Based on what they posted on the internet? You know, what is that? People post all kinds of crazy stuff on the internet all the time. Maybe their friend says they've done something. They're pointing out that Ramos had a bag of dead cats at one time. That's incredibly concerning. Is that enough to take away a legal right? These are very, very problematic concepts that don't seem to address the real problem. Would any type of red flag or background check have caught Salvador Ramos? Would it catch Adam Lanza in Sandy Hook or the guy in Orlando? These guys have passed an existing background check. And if we're going to talk about beginning to red flag people, we're going to start talking about the civil rights of individuals based upon mental health status or whatever group, which will soon be a marginalized group, you're hoping to focus in on. I don't know what other laws would accomplish doing something. I have a friend that texted me, what about buying ammo in bulk? You know, and he pointed out, a very smart friend of mine, he pointed out, you can't go into Walmart and buy bulk Sudafed because you're going to, you know, the law presumes you're somebody who's out there cooking crystal meth. Yeah, but there are so many legitimate reasons to buy bulk ammo. How do you know how to flag someone? You're saying nobody can buy bulk ammo, just like Sudafed? We can't do that anymore? Again, against the purpose of the Second Amendment. Also, by the way, it presumes that guns and ammo are in the same category. They're not in the same category as a controlled substance. It's good gun ownership because of what we're talking about, because of its purpose. And by the way, as a byproduct, to help protect your home. So, by the way, then you can't buy what? 350 rounds? So you buy 50 rounds five times? Puts you at 250? One bulk ammo purchase, I don't know how you're going to apply that generally to Americans and pass muster with that kind of law against the Second Amendment, or tailor it to an individual and say, you are flagged, you can't buy that. I don't know what law in good faith, and I'm trying, and this is an ongoing conversation, I'll bring other gun experts in. I don't know what law in good faith would address any of the problems we're hoping to solve. But I would ask you this. I will search and I will have this conversation in good faith. And if somebody out there is a supporter of gun control, I would ask for the same level of good faith. I think you acknowledge that many of these limitations wouldn't do anything. If not based upon my arguments, instinctively, intuitively, you know. There's no law you could have passed that would have caught Salvador Ramos short of the one I'm asking you to admit in good faith. The vast majority of people in support of gun control actually mean confiscating guns. I'm not saying that in a paranoid fashion. There's a poll that suggests 40% of Democrats would support an Australian-style gun confiscation. That's the argument we're having in the end. That's the one that Joe Biden is alluding to when he starts blurring the lines between 9mm and ARs. And if that's the case, and we can have that. And by the way, I think there's some honesty to that position because it is the only one that would actually affect the problem. It's the only one that would truly reduce gun violence. To poof, get rid of guns, even though you can't practically. But you need to at least start advancing that argument honestly, because all this incremental stuff that wouldn't change what's happened in any of these particular instances or with gun violence stats at large, are a decoy. They're a distraction from the actual end game. I do believe that. The actual end game is a full-on attempt at an Australian-style gun confiscation. And if I'm going to address your incremental proposals in good faith, I would ask that you make that argument in good faith. And then we as the American people can have that debate, taking into account the Second Amendment, taking into account practicality, taking into account our rights. That's a start at steelmanning the arguments. I'm sure many of you that support gun control don't think I did a fair job of advancing your argument. And many of you opposed to gun control think I probably fell short of the rebuttal against those arguments. But I will include you in the future. I'll read your feedback on social media, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, on YouTube. I will read your feedback. I will also bring in other experts who know these issues much better than I. I think it would be fascinating to bring some of the strongest gun rights proponents, Katie Pavlich, Kolyan Noir, into the Will Kane podcast and have them address, in good faith, the best arguments of the other side. I think it'd be awesome to set up a debate, although that's now out of fashion, and I don't know if I could get somebody in support of gun control to do so, a debate between the two sides. But if we're going to go down this path, we can at least go down this path honestly. That's going to do it for me today here on the Will Kane podcast. Appreciate you sticking through. I hope you found it worthwhile. If so, leave 5 stars, leave a comment, and I'll see you next time.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.